The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Loss in our lives takes on many different forms and can be more than just a physical loss. It goes beyond that to include emotional loss, business loss, and loss of personal health. This is Voices for Healing with Kathy Roberts. Today, Kathy and her guests will help you find out that you are not alone in dealing with loss and grief. There are so many different ways to deal with loss. What works for some may not work for others. Together, let's find the solution that you can use. Here's your host, Kathy Roberts.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to Voices for Healing Talk Radio. I am your host, Kathy Roberts, and in my work as a professional counselor, coach, and educator based in the Maryland suburbs of Washington, D.C., I work with people living with and growing in response to all sorts of loss and change. You can learn more about me and my work on my website, kathyroberts.net, and from there we can connect on social media. You can also subscribe to Voices for Healing on iTunes and get regular podcast downloads. I want to acknowledge Pathways Magazine for their support of this radio program. Pathways is a free quarterly journal distributed throughout the Washington, D.C. area. You can pick up your copy at your favorite library or health food store. The summer issue is now available, and the autumn issue will be out on September 1st or thereabouts. For our listeners across the nation and around the world, you can read the Pathways at www.pathwaysmagazine.com. Each week, this show features a guest who has expertise in some area of healing and loss and finding opportunity. My wish for everyone listening is that you connect with some of what you hear on the shows and be inspired to use challenges to grow and become your most real, authentic self. Well, today this program will be a little bit different than it has been in the past. I have a guest lined up who is truly a global mom, and that is the name of one of her books. And she is raising a family all around the world. And last I heard from her, which was last week, she was in Utah in the U.S., and she may be joining us on the line, but she's not quite there yet. So we will shift our focus from the show that was planned for today, which was called On Loss and Living Onward, to some things that are passionate to me. And if Melissa comes on the line, oh, we'll be delighted to have her because I think she has some really good information and some sharing for all of us about loss and living with loss. In the meantime, we will dive into some things that I really like a lot. Anyone who was listening to my talk, I gave a talk in Columbia, Maryland on Friday morning at a group called Connections Over Coffee. You heard me talking about vitality, and vitality has become something that is really one of my biggest passions, and I will share that with you. Before I get started talking about that, though, there is a poem that I absolutely love because it is what most describes what vitality is. And it's a poem by a 12th century poet. And I would love to say that I had it bookmarked here, and I don't. So it will take me just a moment to find this poem, which I think some of you will know. Here we go. This is a poem by Rumi, and it's called The Guest House. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival. A joy, a depression, a meanness. some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. I really love this poem by Rumi. And what this poem communicates to us is that whatever is happening out there in our world that comes our way and affects us in ways both small or large, we are called to face, to rather than slink away from, to meet in whatever way we can at a given time. And I like to think that that's really what this thing that I'm growing passionate about, vitality, is really all about. So what I'd like to talk with you about in the next hour or however much time we have is to tell you more about vitality, give you some education about it, inform you about what saps our vitality, and also empower you with what strengthens our vitality. And we have all of these things going on in our worlds and our lives. I came across a quote last fall by a man who wrote a book about depression. His name is Andrew Solomon, and he has experienced much depression in his life and wrote a book. And the quote that really struck me is when he said, "The opposite of depression is not happiness. The opposite of depression is actually vitality." And I really loved that. It rang so true to me when I read it. You all are familiar with, who have listened to the program before, you know how I often feel things and recognize truth in my body, not just in the words. And when I read that, I thought, you know, he's really onto something here, and I like it. And we live in a culture that is really interested in happiness. And I love happiness. I love being happy. There's nothing like watching my grandchildren's children play in the pool, hanging out with friends. There's so many things that are so enjoyable. And yet there are situations where happiness is really not what we are called to be. When tragedies happen, when sorrows occur, times when we're really furiously angry about something, maybe having to do with our self-esteem being hurt, maybe having to do with some other greater wrong happening, happiness really isn't what we're called to. And vitality says something else. Vitality is what Rumi's talking about, showing up for whatever comes, whether it is a joy, some delight, some celebration, or whether it is something that is incredibly painful that you don't really want to have happen in your life and you don't want entering in. And I love that concept of vitality, which is simply meeting whatever's there, meeting the joys that come and the celebrations, meeting the sorrows or the difficulties, and knowing how can we meet these laughing, like Rumi says. Well, I don't know anybody who really meets them laughing. I sure can't. But we can meet them with energy, with vibrance, with knowing that we can move forward on this. Now, I'm really happy to let you know that our technician has just informed me that we have Melissa on the line. So we are going to take a short break. And when we come back, the program will resume with what we planned, which is talking with Melissa Dalton Bradford about her experience. So we'll be right back.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
Kathy Roberts is not only an exceptional radio host, she's an exceptional listener and counselor. Kathy appeals to motivated, high-functioning people to help them improve their health and vitality. Kathy can meet you where you are and help you identify what you want. Visit Kathy's website at www.kathyroberts.net or call her at 301-651-0019. Kathy works with both individuals and couples and specializes in grief and depression counseling. Get to know yourself by working with Kathy. Visit kathyroberts.net or call 301-651-0019. Kathy Roberts offers Circle of Voices teleclasses to help you focus your mind, engage your energy, and awaken your inner guide. Through this experiential and interactive series, you will know yourself more and learn to express yourself authentically in your personal life. Visit Kathy's website at kathyroberts.net to find out about this teleclass series, designed to open you to change and engage healing in the fabric of your life. Go to kathyroberts.net or call Kathy at 301-651-0019 for more information.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You are listening to Voices for Healing with your host, Kathy Roberts. If you have a question or comment for the program, please send an email to Kathy@KathyRoberts.net. That's Kathy@KathyRoberts.net. Now back to Voices for Healing.
Well, listeners, those of you who have tuned in from the beginning and you heard the beginning of the program, I bet you're delighted to hear that the person you tuned in to hear, which is Melissa Dalton Bradford, is now on the line with us. Melissa, I'm so glad you're here.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here, too. A little bit sweaty. I'm glad we've gotten through.
I am, too.
That you've been patient and that we're connected. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Yes, I'm really glad you're here and glad you were persistent. Melissa had a little trouble connecting and now she's here and we're really glad about that. So let me tell my audience about Melissa. Melissa Dalton Bradford is an author, independent scholar, popular public speaker, wife, and bereaved mother who's published essays, poetry, and two books, including On Loss and Living Onward, Collected Voices for the Grieving and Those Who Would Mourn with Them. Melissa holds a BA in German and an MA in Comparative Literature. She speaks five languages and has taught language, humanities, and writing on the university level. She and her husband, Randall, have built their family in Vienna, Hong Kong, Oslo, Paris, Munich, Singapore, Geneva, and are presently moving to Frankfurt. It was in the middle of a major move from Paris, France, to Munich, Germany, that the Bradfords lost their firstborn son, Parker, to a tragic drowning accident. He was attempting to save the life of a fellow student caught in a lethal hidden whirlpool. With that tragedy, Melissa was catapulted to the most foreign world she's ever inhabited, the entirely alien but transformative Land of Loss. And that's what our show is so about, loss and transformation, and how those two things can go hand in hand when we open ourselves and accept that in every loss there is that possibility for transformation. So, Melissa, it's been 7 years since
that's
Parker's
right.
death, 7 years this month, actually.
Yeah.
And in our emails last week, you shared that you and a group of friends have created a July ritual that you do to honor Parker and in memory of Parker. And I thought since that is so fresh for you, this is something that you did this past Friday, I thought
That's
maybe
right.
you could begin by sharing that with us.
Yes, thank you for asking about that. This was a memorial hike to one of the highest peaks in what's called the Wasatch Mountain Range. It's in Utah. It's a part of the Rocky Mountains. And it was a suggestion, actually, from a very good friend of mine who was not a bereaved parent herself, but who had known our son and our family from the beginning of our son's life. She said, you know, Melissa, we need to
Melissa, I'm so sorry to interrupt. I'm getting a little bit of reverb. Are you on speakerphone by any chance?
I'm not on speakerphone, but I'm going to close my computer. Can you hear me a little bit better now? Is that
right now? I can hear you without that little bit of reverberation.
So, you know, yeah. I think it's because I also had my laptop open. So if this is better, I'll just tuck that laptop away and I'll just talk like this.
This is much better. I want everyone to be able to really catch all you're saying. So thank you.
Yeah. So what my friend suggested is that something had to be established in memory of Parker that would do two key things. And I think that these two things can be helpful for anyone who finds themselves in that terrible alien land of grief. Number one, that you gather people together so that you don't feel so isolated, because grief does isolate. The very nature of grief makes us feel catapulted away from the rest of humanity. Number two, that it draws the person of Parker back into our circle. Parker was very athletic. He was the co-captain of his basketball team, of his volleyball team, and a highly, highly social personality. And so my girlfriend said, you know, why don't we do something really muscular? It'll bring people together. Let's find a high mountain and let's hike to it every year. And so that's what we did. And because our family has lived in many, many different geographies and cultures, we're in the middle of our 17th international move as we speak. We have people that come from around the world, from Singapore, from France, from Germany, from Switzerland, different places in Europe and Asia. And even though they might not have a personal experience with loss, they will be a part of this circle that memorializes this young man, but it also helps them converse with other people who've had this experience. You know how, I mean, you do this professionally, Kathy, you know how people are at a loss for words. They're stymied. They don't know what to say. And so very often we don't say anything, which unfortunately contributes to that feeling of isolation that people have when they're bereaved. And so people find a circle of open hearts who are willing to talk and share what their own experiences are. So that's what we did. I'm still nursing the blisters from hiking in the sun at the top of this mountain, but it felt great and was a beautiful experience. It was, in fact, a joyful experience.
The two things that would be really super helpful to you around having people around you to not be alone, and also bringing Parker's spirit and his energy into this ritual that you've created.
That's exactly right. You know, what made our experience with loss maybe even more complicated than it even had to be. Loss is always complicated, but what made it even harder was that we were in the middle of this move from one community to another, and so we arrived in a new country, a new language, a new culture. We knew no one. No one that saw us, met us, just tried to greet us on the street, had any idea that we had a huge hole in the middle of our torso and that we were a broken family. And so that made us feel even more alone. So we had to seek out people through technology and different means to join with us in our experience. And I can attest to the fact that there is a great deal of power in community. If you can create a community, if you can draw people into your grieving circle, that can generate a kind of healing hope, healing energy, and it schools other people so that people who are on the outside of the experience of grief can be educated, and it breaks down the walls of fear. I'm sure that you could say a lot about how fear blocks us, both the grieving and the onlooking community of the grievers. It blocks us from reaching to one another and helping each other. I'm sure that you've spoken with many people about that experience.
Yeah, it sure does, as those who love and care for the people don't really know what to say or are afraid they will say the wrong thing and cause greater pain. Mm-hmm. And the isolation can be so profound as well. And I'm also thinking, though, about how you describe in your book a period of isolation that you took on willfully and perhaps even purposely for that first year or so of grieving. And for those who might be listening who are newly bereaved, I'd like you to share that with them too, so that people don't feel like they have to go out and do this right now if that's not what they're feeling like doing. How do you pronounce that? Is it avolut?
Yes, you said it just right. It's a Jewish term. Well, it's from the Jewish tradition. It's a Hebrew term, avolut. I'm glad that you brought that up because I wouldn't want to mislead people into thinking that my response to loss was to immediately start doing a hoedown and square dancing and doing all of the light and frivolous things that would somehow distract me from my grief. On the contrary, what avolut is, and I'm not Jewish by heritage or by faith. I'm actually a practicing Christian, but I found the term avolut during the first winter after losing our Parker in the summertime. Because, as I just explained, we had moved to a new country and I didn't know anyone, I was blessed, I feel, to have this incubation period of retreating socially. I'm normally a very outgoing, extroverted person. I'm the one who hosts parties. I'm a high-energy type of gal, and I was laid flat, Kathy. I was laid flat by this loss. I had a hard time lifting my arms, lifting the corners of my mouth, and I retreated. Besides taking care of my family, I retreated into a period of deep, intense reflection and study, and I tried to gather around me in reading a community of co-mourners because I didn't know anyone. I just went to the books. And in the books, I found stories of loss and survival. I studied Holocaust stories, 9/11 stories, tsunami stories, war veteran stories, and of course, many of the journals of and personal writings of people who had lost spouses, parents, and children specifically. And I found out that there are many different cultures that do grief better than we do in America. For all of our strengths, for all of our resilience and joy and can-do attitude, we sometimes want to bungee jump over the valley of death. We want to move people quickly from A to Z. We want to avoid the ugliness and sometimes the disorientation that those who are bereaved feel. So for our listeners today, I speak to you specifically and I say, I understand that sense of disorientation, of reeling, of keening. So what I found in my readings was that the Jewish culture has a term in place and they have for centuries. It's called avolut. And avolut means that it is a prescribed course of grief. You pull away from normal social interaction, from normal celebrations, entertainments, distractions. What I did was I didn't listen to, watch, or read anything that was sort of frivolous or lighthearted. I turned to all spiritual and scriptural writings that I could and tried to understand what I was experiencing. And I did that hour after hour after hour, day after day, trying to learn from the experience, and I did. It meant holing up, but it was a very holy experience for me. I was taught spiritual things that I don't believe I would have learned had I been, you know, shopping, partying, running away from my experience. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I understand exactly what you're saying, which is why I thought it was so important that you share with us. The my earliest grief and loss was my grandmother when I was 13, and I had no idea how to handle that. Mm-hmm. The next one was a divorce 7 years ago, myself 7 years ago, and that was huge, you know, a long marriage, three children. And I had the same inclination that you describe. I didn't have the word for it, avolut, but I did have this turning inward that lasted for me, it was about 18 months. And people would say things to me like, are you dating yet? And I would say back, I'm pretty insane right now, so that wouldn't really be a good idea.
I'm just going to figure out how to tie my shoes again. I remember feeling like I'd had a stroke. And medical studies say that the experience of traumatic grief, if your horrific experience with divorce, mine with losing a healthy son one day to the next, he was gone, that it leaves an imprint on your physical being, that it becomes a part of your medical record. And so the fact that I was asking myself, how did I used to put toothpaste on my toothbrush? Or wait, do I put the keys in the ignition? You know that feeling, right, Kathy?
Yes, it is a huge disorientation. I love the word disorientation for it. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so for me to orient again, I didn't need to go running around in circles, and I certainly didn't need someone telling me, you need to get on with this. That's certainly not the right of someone who's standing on the banks of the whirlpool of grief. I think that we give grief its respect as a sacred passage when we allow our bereaved friends to enter into that experience. And when we stand by honoring that experience and saying, I am here with you in your disorientation. I won't try and prod you out of it. I won't try and make you better. I won't dance the jollity jig around this whirlpool that you are in. I am here at any point when you need to reach up and hold my hand to give you moral support and comfort. You know, Kathy, the word comfort comes from two Latin terms, con fortis, which means with strength. It's not that we're trying to put a Band-Aid over something or trying to placate someone with platitudes, which you know and I know just put salt in the wound. What we want to do to give strength is to stand by strong and say, I am here with you in this. I will not leave you. I will experience this pain, this disorientation with you as long as you're there. And I had friends that would do that, and my books did that as well. I found a resonant chorus of other people who experienced what I was in, and I realized, oh, I'm not losing my mind. I'm reforming my experience in reality. I'm also reconstructing my relationship with my son. And I think that is a critical part of finding your way when you are bereaved, that death might end a mortality, but it does not have to end the relationship. And that, for me, is what ongoing bereavement means. It doesn't mean that I'm still lying flat on my back and wailing and keening. It means that I'm transforming my relationship with that person whom I love and whom I still believe exists in a different realm, in a different reality, and that partnership carries me forward.
Yes. You've said so much richness in your comments just now, and I want to highlight some of them. And one that is a thought that I think you and I both share, and that is that sometimes our culture wants to so quickly feel better and people get uncomfortable with grief or sorrow going on for some period of time. But the truth is, it has a life of its own. It comes and goes like waves in the ocean, and it goes on forever and ever and ever. I can still grieve my grandmother who died when I was 13.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I still find myself having connection with her. I dreamt about her for the first time that I ever remember dreaming about her this past Friday night. And that was so meaningful to me that it's been that many years, I've never dreamt about her. And here she showed up in a dream. So I'm very curious about that. I feel very wonderful about that, and I'm curious about it. Mm. And so I recall a grieving parent telling me many years ago, before I had given very much thought to this when I was a much younger woman, that as she shampooed her hair to attend the funeral of her son, she felt the disconnect of it all. Doing something so routine while preparing to do something so profoundly disorienting.
Yes, yes. And I had similar experiences too. In fact, that seems to be a common trait of early grief. One wonderful writer, Nicholas Wolterstorff, I recommend his book, Lament for a Son, for anyone who's lost a child or experienced other bereavement, particularly through death. And he says, I walked to a grocery store, and he explains that he was repulsed. He was repulsed that the mundane life had gone on, and he was almost in another world. My description for it has been, I felt like I was walking around in an astronaut suit for months. I was in the company of other people, but I wasn't breathing the same air. Everything sounded different. My voice sounded different. And I was incapable of connecting for quite a while with other people. Some people call it being shell-shocked. I call it being shelled. I think that something in nature or in the great spirit of the universe, I call it God, shows us and protects us. And I think that the universe is saying to us, you are in a rare period of time. You have been skinned. You've been exposed. We use language like you've been broken open. Other parents say, I feel eviscerated. That experience of being opened up like that is an opportunity for growth. As you've said so well, it's a chance for transformation and for learning. And if we try to rush people through that, we're escorting them past an opportunity to change and to learn and absorb things that are of a highly particulate matter, I think. Highly spiritual messages can be conveyed to us during that time. We want, in fact, to sit and experience it. And so we need silence and retreat and openness. And as you've also implied, not to be afraid of that. We as a culture, I think, are very afraid of pain. Grief is very painful, physically as well as psychologically. And we want to numb it, right? We want to numb it.
Yes.
We want to get past it and get away from it. But if we can enter into it, unafraid that we will come out to the other end, not the same as we were as we entered in, but transformed, then we then carry that transformation, Kathy, into all of our subsequent social relationships. You are a different person than you were before your divorce. I am a different person than I was before I watched my child take his last breath. I am fundamentally changed, and I can be changed for the better. That is the message, I know, of your program. It's the message of your program, isn't it?
Yes, that's the message of the program, and it's the message that you have in your book as well. You know, Melissa, we're coming up on time for our break, and I want to share with our listeners a quote from Kay Talbot that you have in your book, and that will begin to, perhaps you touched on this in this part of the show, and maybe we can follow up on it as we continue after our break. And Kay Talbot writes, as co-mourners, we help to normalize this loss when we convey to parents that the goal is not to detach from or to let go of their child, but to acknowledge the reality of the child's physical death while also building new connections to the child's spirit, which you talked to us so beautifully about in your opening segment of the program. But we need to take a short break right now, and we'll be right back.
Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be. Listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Kathy Roberts offers Circle of Voices teleclasses to help you focus your mind, engage your energy, and awaken your inner guide. Through this experiential and interactive series, you will know yourself more and learn to express yourself authentically in your personal life. Visit Kathy's website at kathyroberts.net to find out about this teleclass series, designed to open you to change and engage healing in the fabric of your life. Go to kathyroberts.net or call Kathy at 301-651-0019 for more information. Kathy Roberts is not only an exceptional radio host, she's an exceptional listener and counselor. Kathy appeals to motivated, high-functioning people to help them improve their health and vitality. Kathy can meet you where you are and help you identify what you want. Visit Kathy's website at www.kathyroberts.net or call her at 301-651-0019. Kathy works with both individuals and couples and specializes in grief and depression counseling. Get to know yourself by working with Kathy. Visit kathyroberts.net or call 301-651-0019.
Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be. Listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You are listening to Voices for Healing with your host, Kathy Roberts. If you have a question or comment for the program, please send an email to Kathy at KathyRoberts.net. That's Kathy at KathyRoberts.net. Now back to Voices for Healing.
This is Kathy Roberts again, and my guest is Melissa Dalton Bradford. She has written the book on loss and living onward. And I want to say one thing to our listeners and to you, Melissa, and that is, this is really the most beautiful book I have read on grief since Joan Didion's Year of Magical Thinking. And
Oh, my goodness.
I just have to say that to you. This book, I was in a little bit of, I'll just call it regular, everyday kind of grief when I began reading it. And I found myself reading it through tears. And it was, and that was what I needed. It was just what I needed to be reading your book and allowing tears to flow. And I just thought it was beautiful. The combination of quotes and your own personal story are very touching and meaningful.
Thank you. I'm so grateful that you would say that to me. The response to the book has been more powerful than I had expected. It was a wonderful experience to be able to combine my personal essays with these voices that of many people who know grief of different kinds, and to honor them in that way. And in that sense, also reaching out to others and say, you are part of this community too. None of us will make it through this life without losing. And so all of us need to have a vocabulary for our grief, and we need to know where we can turn to find support and strength from one another. So thank you for saying that, Kathy. I'm very touched by that. I am.
Yeah, it's absolutely a beautiful book, and I recommend it to anyone. I also had a thought as you were talking about sometimes people say, well, how do I grieve? And I think one way to say it is the same way you live. And you chose the way that you chose to really dive in and study death and bereavement and grief is something about the way you live your life as a scholarly person interested in learning and teaching. And so I just think that's important for other people to think, well, how would I do it? Well, if you're an athlete, part of your grief may be some form of athleticism. Perhaps you get out and walk and listen to tapes or CDs or something that helps you while you're walking. But I just want to share that. It struck me that that's how we can successfully grieve, the same way that we live. Whatever we're passionate about when we're living, we can use that to help us move forward with our grief.
Right, right. And as I'm sure you've said to other guests and on other programs, every grief is as individual as the DNA of the people who are grieving. So people will respond differently. And as you said, I like what you just said about athletes grieving athletically, and artists tend to grieve artistically, and musicians
yes.
musically, and I'm a writer and a scholar and a global liver, and so that's how I responded. I went right to the words. That's what I did.
Yes.
That was my natural inclination, and because I've lived in many different countries, every time I've moved to a new country, I've consulted the maps and the experts of that country, and that's essentially the same thing that I did with the Land of Loss. I went right to the people who knew it, who could tell me what this rocky, forbidding, foreboding terrain was about. And in a way, to form an analogy, those people who had crossed that terrain of grief, who had been to the top of the mountain and made it through the valleys and everything, they were my trail guides, in a way, if you will. And I saw, okay, they've made it. And they might be scarred and bruised and blistered, but they've made it, and I'm going to follow them. So that's
yes.
what I did.
So you created a community of kindred spirits who, in the beginning, you didn't know face to face, but they were certainly out there. They were writing about what you were feeling, and it helped
right.
a lot.
Right, and in fact, I'm so flattered beyond words that you would. Mentioned Joan Didion's book, The Year of Magical Thinking. That is the first book that I took into hand, besides Holy Writ. So I turned right to Scripture. I felt God would understand this as well as anyone, and so I was reading Scripture right and left. But I also read Joan Didion. I appreciated her voice, her frank, sort of acerbic, very sparse prose, And at the end of my book on loss and living onward, I even thank all of those writers. There are only two with whom I've had any direct contact, but they were very gracious, Kate Braestrup and Nicholas Woltersdorf, wonderful human beings, as well as the seminal writers on grief. But all of the other ones, I didn't know Wordsworth or Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens. I don't know Joan Didion, but I thanked them in my acknowledgments because in my loneliest hours, I communicated with them, and I nodded when I read their sentences, and I wept with them about their own stories. And so they were my virtual community of experienced grievers, and then they gave me hope that I could
yes.
move forward.
Mm. Yes, yes. I want to share with our listeners a quote from your book. Oh, before I do that, though, I want to give you a chance to... You're in the United States right now, is that right?
I am. I'm in between Switzerland and Germany, so why not take a detour to the Rocky Mountains? That's where I am.
Well, while you are where you are, maybe you could share with our listeners if you have any talks coming up or projects that they might be interested in and how they can reach you.
Yes, yes. Well, I've been doing a number of things. I was in California just a week ago giving a large regional fireside is what I called it. I will be speaking on a Utah television radio program this Wednesday morning, KJZZ, on Thursday night on KSL Live Prime Time. I'll be doing a spot that will reference also grief and loss and will carry footage from this mountain hike that 65 of us made this last Friday. On Friday the 1st, then August 1st, I will be at the Salt Lake City Gateway Barnes & Noble doing a book signing throughout the afternoon. And then I walk onto an airplane on Saturday morning and fly to Frankfurt, my new home. So that's what I'm going to be doing this week. If people want to contact me, then they can go to two Facebook pages. One is from my first book, which is Global Mom, a memoir that was published a year ago. There's a Global Mom Facebook page where I field all sorts of comments, and I'm apt to actually take up email or Facebook contact with my readers. I enjoy that very much. The other Facebook page is called On Loss and Living Onward, and you can also leave messages there. My blog is called Melissa Writes of Passage, WRITES. I've taken just a month-long break there while I'm navigating the PR for the public relations and the communication and public speaking for my second book on loss. and while I'm navigating this new, this international move, but I'll be taking that up again in the end of August. So those are three places where I can be reached without question. And I would love to take questions and comments from readers there.
That's excellent. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Kay Talbot writes, as co-mourners, we help to normalize this loss when we convey to parents that the goal... Did I already read this?
You did, but I want you to read it again.
Okay.
Talk about that even more.
Okay. This is just... I'm a little bit different today than I sometimes am. So, yes. As co-mourners, we help to normalize this loss when we convey to parents that the goal is not to detach from or let go of their child, but to acknowledge the reality of the child's physical death while also building new connections to the child's spirit. I think that's so important. It's okay to read that again.
Well, it is. Would you like me to comment on that? Because I think
I want you
critical.
To, yes.
It's critical for not only bereaved parents to keep in mind, but others who have lost through death. The old school of grief theory, if I can call it that, was based on a Freudian model. This is going to sound way too academic, but I think it's important for us to understand how we are influenced, how society at large is influenced by theories that grab hold and stick, even though they are wrong, even though they might be wrong. Freud did not believe in any existence beyond mortality. And so when he experienced loss, or when he worked with his patients who had experienced loss, he urged them to move through their grief as quickly as possible and reinvest their emotional energy in what he called real, the real, which for him was mortality. For anyone who believes in anything that exists beyond mortality, then that's an insufficient model, because the normal response to death, to bereavement, is to continue to yearn for the beloved that we have lost. This is an experience even in the lives of those who don't self-identify as religious or even would consider themselves atheists or agnostics. There is still this long period, the longest period, that is called yearning. The newest school of grief theory, the key voices there are Dennis Klass, Phyllis Silverman. They speak about the nature of a continuing bond. That is, in fact, an energizing and healthy resolution, if you will, to the experience of grief, because one can continue to memorialize or try and sustain a relationship of some spiritual nature with the person they have lost. Other cultures do this much better than we do. Having lived in Asia, I know that the Chinese honor their deceased elders, and they, through regularized rituals that are experienced individually or as a community, will reach to or continue a relationship with the bereaved. African cultures do that. My Indonesian friends do that. I learned so much from other cultures who already have in place rituals that will continue a relationship with the bereaved. And I'm not talking here, Kathy, about seances or something of that nature. I'm just talking about recognizing that some sort of existence goes beyond our mortality, and that you can have a dream about your grandmother many years after her death, that she's somehow actively interested in your life. My experience has been that my son is very actively engaged in our family's life. In fact, his key interest is in helping us be happy. Another, if you'll let me continue going on,
sure.
Another writer of grief, Roger Rosenblatt, lost his adult daughter suddenly. And he, although he would consider himself someone who had thought about spiritual matters that much before this trauma in his life, began to understand, as he describes in his two books, Making Toast and Kayak Morning, that there was some sort of connection to his daughter. And that there was a loving, warm synergy that went on between them, even though she was mortally absent from him. The ancients say that the dead are, they're invisible, they're not absent. And that's very helpful for me. It's not something that I'm concocting. It's something that is based on experiences, shared experiences in our family, that Parker is vibrant. And I would even say maybe even more alive than a lot of us mortals, a lot of us in our lives. And that great energy can encourage us and give us hope. And
well, this comment that you're making, I think, can help a lot of people, because even before some of these more recent grief writers that you're, grief and loss writers that you're referencing, people would come to me and they would say things like, you know, I had a dream about my parent, or they would say, you know, I talked to my mother and she's been dead for 15 years. Is there something wrong with me? And of course, there isn't something wrong with you. It's beautiful that you continue to have a connection and a relationship with this person who's no longer living and physical in this world and in your life. So we're really fast approaching the end of our program here, but I did just want to comment on how your comments can really help people normalize those things that they've already been doing. They didn't need new grief researchers to tell them this. They were doing it automatically because it's what they needed to do to help themselves heal, and it's how reality was for them. Melissa, this has been wonderful to have you on this show. I'd like for you to hang on for just a moment when we end. We're just about to conclude, and I'd like for you to hang on if you could for just another minute.
Is that
okay?
Thank you.
Okay, that's
great.
Mm-hmm. Well, listeners, I want to thank you for tuning in to today's show on loss and living onward. And I hope that you have enjoyed this show and you will have some questions for Melissa. She can connect with you through Facebook. And I hope you'll join us next week when psychiatrist, author, and teacher Mark Epstein joins us to discuss his book, The Trauma of Everyday Life. Mark will share a Buddhist perspective on trauma and suffering and the healing practices that awareness and meditation offer. Until then, this is Kathy Roberts. Transform your life. Embrace vitality.
Thank you for listening to Voices for Healing. Please join Kathy Roberts again next Monday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We wish you the best recovery from your loss, and we'll talk again next week.